Thank you for everyone's patience. My apologies for starting a little bit late. Oh, I think that clock's a tiny bit fast. Greetings, everyone. This is the... Is the tape going? We're good to go? All right, great. This is the Monday, March 3rd, 2014, Committee of the Transportation and Public Safety Policy Committee. And before we get started, you might notice Michael looks a little different today.
Oh, yeah.
Michael is in San Diego, where I'm happy to report it's raining. And so this is Suzanne Sobotka, who has taken Michael's place, and she's doing a fantastic job jumping in with both feet, baptism by fire, drinking water from a fire hose, all that. She comes from Matt Schmidt's office. She's legislative assistant there, and I feel a little bit guilty leaving Matt high and dry at the start of session, but obviously not guilty enough because here she is. So welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you for being here.
With that, we don't quite yet have a quorum, but we're going to start with our first bill, Senate File 2100, Senator Sieben. Oh, there she is. Greetings. Welcome to the committee.
Members, this is a bill that Senate File 2100 would allow for deputy registrars. It would eliminate the necessity for a deputy registrar to be a resident of the county in which that office is located. And with me today to testify on the bill is Gary Spooner, who owns a deputy registrar. And has very ably run the deputy registrar office located in Cottage Grove. How many years now, Gary?
42.
42 years. So,
All right.
Perhaps we could hear from Mr. Spooner. But first, actually, if we could please move the A1 amendment. This is the first stop of this bill, and it would get the shape and the form I would like. Members, I think the amendment needs to be passed out. But all it does
the
is...
The A1 amendment, we're not... quite yet ready to move it, Senator Sieben, but we'll put it in front of us, and then when we have a quorum, we'll move it and get it adopted. This is the effective date upon the final enactment. We might have a quorum. Stay tuned. Quorum is present. All right. So Senator Peterson moves the A1 amendment. That's fine. All in favor say aye.
Yep.
Aye.
Opposed,
aye.
No. Motion passes. Yeah. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So perhaps we could hear now from Gary Spooner, who's the...
Welcome, Mr. Spooner. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senator Sieben. My name is Gary Spooner. I am a deputy registrar in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. Have been for, I think, 42 years. I've had that office. In 15 days, I'm going to be 75 years old. And I figured that it's about time that I retired. And I found a willing buyer for my business. But unfortunately, or fortunately, the way he looks at it, he lives in Olmsted County. And the... statute that concerns us is on the naughty list, and we have to remove it in order for me to sell my business to somebody that's willing to buy it and whom I trust. So that's one of the reasons that we're trying to get this changed is for my business and, of course, any future deputy registrar that is probably going to be up for sale.
So, Mr. Chair and members, just by way of explanation, deputy registrars have the right to sell their businesses, but that has to be acceptable, that buyer has to be acceptable to the Department of Public Safety. So, and then there's this requirement in law that the buyer has to live in the county in which the office is located. So, again, what this bill would do would just take away that residency requirement. and the Department of Public Safety can speak for themselves, but I've been told that they don't have an opinion on the bill.
Great. Thank you. Questions, members? Oh, all right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, just have you done any research on the reason for the county requirement, and are we going down the road now that somebody from Texas could buy the business and stay in Texas? Is the intent so we kind of have local people that are serving the public with this service being there? Is that, and I just asked the question of, is there unintended consequences by doing this?
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
and
Stephen.
Senator Westrom, I believe that the, and Jim Hurst from the Deputy Registrars Association is here and can speak to this, but I believe that originally the legislation was enacted in some way to, that was part of the requirement of where county offices or deputy registrar offices can be located. If you remember that there are restrictions on where they can be, they can't be too close together in an effort to better serve the public. So I would imagine that the residency requirement was a part of that, but perhaps Mr. Hurst has more to add.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Hurst on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. Mr. Chairman and Senator Westrom, you bring up a very good question. This change in law happened, I believe, about 25 years ago. I could not, in my research, determine why this change took place. What we are seeking is to remove this requirement, keeping in mind that, and again, to the best of my knowledge, it would not conflict with perhaps counties and cities who may operate deputy registrar locations, but in the case where a county or city is deemed the registrar, frequently the county auditor, for example, is deemed the deputy registrar for that county. I suspect that in those cases, then it should be a county resident who is the county auditor, this would not preclude those counties and cities who have public offices to continue to have such a policy of a residency requirement. This is simply to facilitate the sale of an office which is legal, and certainly at the end of the day, the Department of Public Safety has to sign off on a pending sale. And I suspect that the department would probably have concerns if ownership was from a faraway place such as Texas. Sir.
Senator Western.
Mr. Chair, what currently would give them concern if we take residency or county out? What would be a reason they could have concern? I mean, I'm not sure that it's bad, but it might be. And the sense would be, are we talking about an absentee owner and a do we now preclude a large corporation from just coming in across the country and running all these as a great opportunity? It's a government service that every resident just about has to have, and so do we turn these into Walmart opportunities? And maybe that's okay, but that would just, as I'm thinking out loud here and thinking of why the county requirement would be in there, it seems like maybe there was some thoughtfulness in why we do this or not. I just asked the question. I think the committee should think about that. And I would sit here undecided at this point.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Westrom, we certainly have no problem with the department having oversight and giving approval of these sales when they do occur. For instance, we would not want to see someone with a criminal background, a former felon perhaps, suddenly having control of one of these offices and access to the funds and the information that's there. I can tell you that as a representative of this association for the many years, I think many of you have probably grown tired of me coming before you frequently and pleading for filing fee increases, which is the only revenue these offices survive on. It is certainly not a lucrative money-making venture to have these offices. And I would think most corporations would probably just look at the bottom line and figure out it really isn't worth the trouble to try and operate these facilities based on the revenue that they can realize off of it. It's really not that much.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I'd just add to Senator Westrum that the Commissioner of Public Safety still has the final authority to appoint the deputy registrars too. So in the situation of where you talked about, you know, if a corporation tried to take over all the deputy registrar offices, that in statute now, in current law that we're not proposing to change, they're still appointed at the pleasure of the commissioner.
All right. Any other questions, members? Senator Sender.
Mr. Chair and members, I would just offer, I'm certainly aware of and a good friend of, I suspect, I think we are, Jeff, the person proposing to buy this, and I will tell you, while it's not a discussion on policy, which is the case here, in this particular instance, this individual runs a great office in Rochester. He's also, amongst our community, an outstanding citizen, township officer, and very, very involved in lots of causes within our community. So. This is a good person that wants to do this.
Great. Thank you. Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
I've met Mr. Orth before and believe him to be a fine man, but I'll just mention that he has very big shoes to fill with Gary Spooner leaving Cottage Grove. He's been a long-time institution in South Washington County. And you may not be surprised, but he also moonlights as Santa Claus.
I'm shocked
you mentioned that. So all my children have told him what they wanted.
That ho 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 has entered into the record. Senator Westrum.
And Mr. Chair, and I just raised the question. I don't want you to think that it's necessarily wrong. I'm just trying to think of an example and scenario where maybe you all of a sudden can't get a hold of somebody and it's not good service. I'm not clear in between here and the floor. I can get more clarification on it, but I don't think there's any reason to think the purchaser, Jeff, from Olmsted would be bad. Once we open this up, this isn't the transaction that we should be concerned about. It's 20 or 50 or 100 transactions down the road of the unintended consequence, and if we find ourselves with a gate that we maybe didn't intend. And so I asked that question because I would like to make sure that service is a part of this, because it is a government-forced service that everybody has to buy, and it's probably the most logical way to do it, but then we want to ensure that there's a high level of responsiveness to the citizens that we're serving. And so that's the point of my question, not at all in questioning the current transaction, because I don't believe they'd be here if they had bad motives, and it's just down the road that once we open this up, I don't think the Public Safety Commissioner has objective or subjective criteria to decide to turn somebody down because they're from Texas, or maybe somebody says they have bad business practices in Louisiana, or you name the state. I mean, that would not be a reason the commissioner could turn them down, from my understanding. That'd be my concern.
So Senator,
we can talk between now
Senator
and the floor.
Senator Westrum, I'll just Members, I'll just call your attention to subdivision 2, paragraph B. The language says the commissioner may appoint and for cause discontinue a deputy registrar for any statutory or home rule charter city as the public interest and convenience may require. If the auditor for the city county in which the city is situated chooses not to accept appointment as the deputy registrar for the county, et cetera. And I also note, so that's kind of what gives the commissioner the authority that Senator Steben and Mr. Hurst just described. I'll also mention that I know that the agency was asked why does this law exist, and they have no recollection of why it was enacted in the first place, and couldn't come up with a reason why it's there. And I don't want to speak for the agency, but I do know some of that checking was done ahead of this hearing. I don't know if the agency wants to speak. You don't have to. If you don't want to, I'd like to move this along. Anything else, members? I don't see anyone jumping to the table. Senator Kent, sorry. I saw you raised your hand earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just by virtue of further vouching for Mr. Spooner, having driven around South Washington County myself quite a few times, it is startling to find yourself in the car next to Santa Claus, but he is a real fixture in the community. I've worked with his wife over the years. But just to the point about service, I think when we talk about the ability for somebody to be able to sell their business and to be able to retire, not everybody's going to want to take over this sort of an enterprise, and that's a small pool. And I think this making it available for other interested parties to be able to take over this kind of an office is in the name of service to community members. So I would just throw that out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomasoni.
So shouldn't we find out why it was put in there instead of saying we can't remember why?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Steben.
Senator Thomasoni, I didn't realize it until now, but this could be a very good unsession bill.
That's not the answer to my question, though.
Well,
Senator Thomasoni, there was an attempt
so
to find out why.
And
sometimes the record doesn't support, the record isn't there as to why.
Because Santa Claus can like go from roof to roof real quickly. So, but at the same time, maybe there's a reason for this being there, and I might want to know what it is.
Well, I'm sure Senator Thomasoni, someone at some time thought it was a good idea, but they didn't memorialize it in a way that, So an argument for findings in legislation, members. I'm just kidding. Although, park that thought. Anything else, members? Right. Would anyone else like to testify on this bill? No. Okay. Do I have a motion? Senator Kent / Syndrome. Don't get to pick. Moves that Senate File 2100 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor, Senator Steben?
Yes.
All right. Anything further, members? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to Senator Dahl, Senate File 1246. Welcome to the committee, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and reminds me of my very first bill that I passed in 2008. Counties have a good grip on their deputy registrars because just to move the deputy registrar's office across the street in New Prague, because the main street of New Prague is one side is Scott County, the other side is Le Sueur County, it took a legislative act. So unanimous decision, my very first bill, we moved the deputy registrar's office in New Prague across the street. But I don't know if that adds to the debate or not. It's a pleasure to be here today about a very serious topic. Of course, in addition to my job here, I'm a civics teacher, government teacher, and a driver education instructor for the last 31 years. And if I could just take a minute to publicly express my sincere sympathy for the families, friends at Carleton College, who we lost three young people this last Friday in a terrible car accident in Northfield, and my thoughts and prayers go out to the families of all the people affected there in our little town.
And so now we have two young people who are still in tough shape.
Mr. Chair, I think there is one who the is, I think he's improving, however, so there's
all right,
one.
Thanks. Well, please convey our thoughts and our sympathies as well.
Yes, thank you. So this particular Senate file 1246 clarifies the hit-and-run statute by requiring drivers involved in collisions to determine what they struck. It closes a loophole in current law that encourages drivers to flee the scene of a collision and then, if caught, escape liability by claiming they did not know what they had struck. In 2007, the Minnesota Supreme Court reversed a hit-and-run conviction based on the language in the current statute and stated that the legislature could rewrite the law to require drivers to stop and determine actually what they had hit. This law has continued to be a problem since that time. So stopping and offering assistance to someone injured in a collision could also mean the difference between life and death instead of the driver driving off. I have two testifiers here with me today. Chris Zell. Mrs. L's brother, Kane Thompson, was actually the victim in the 2007 case that I cited earlier. And then Kelly Moeller, she's a prosecutor and interim executive director for the Minnesota Alliance on Crime, which is a victims' rights organization. It was a mother whose daughter who had been killed and hit by a hit-and-run driver in Dakota County that contacted the Minnesota Alliance on Crime and then led to Kelly and the MAC drafting this particular bill. So we can get into specifics of the bill. Perhaps I'm going to allow Ms. Zell to give her testimony, then Ms. Moeller, and then if you have specific questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Chris Zell, and I live in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I'd like to first of all thank you, Senator Dibble, and the rest of the members of the committee for your time and your thoughtful consideration of this proposed legislation. I'd also like to thank Senator Dahl and Kelly and all the people who have worked so hard on this legislation. I'm here on behalf of my family, my father and my brother, to testify in support of this proposed legislation. My brother, Kane Thompson, was 26, and he was killed by a hit-and-run driver while legally changing a tire on the side of the road on June 16, 2002. As you can imagine, it was a day that changed our lives forever. The driver who struck and killed Kane was charged and convicted of three counts, felony counts, of including hit and run. To be perfectly honest, at that time, the charges and the convictions against the driver were never the focus of our family's energy. We felt we needed to spend our energy healing from this horrible ordeal. It did absolutely nothing to bring our brother back. But after 7 years of appeals to the Minnesota Supreme Court and the ultimate reversal of the hit-and-run conviction, we can no longer sit back and watch. The Supreme Court said that the state failed to prove that he knew that he hit a person. We find this hard to believe. After all, he hit a 230-pound man. He ran over and drug a 5-inch thick tire from Kane's car with a flat tire of his own, a dent in the hood, and a broken-out headlight at 11:30 at night. The pure and simple fact is he didn't stop to investigate. The Supreme Court reversal has basically paved the way for future drivers to claim ignorance to what was hit. We've already seen it used in a defense as a defense in many cases, including the Amy Sensor case. In my opinion, it is very difficult to prove what a person knew at the time of a collision. It also encourages drunk or other impaired drivers to flee the scene instead of offering life-saving assistance. This proposed legislation requires drivers to stop and investigate what they struck. This change would also help many people, and quite possibly saves lives. Every time I hear of another hit-and-run story on the news, I am, first of all, sick to my stomach to think about the families who have just been torn apart. And second, I'm appalled to think that I'll probably soon be hearing of this reversal, that the driver would probably be using that reversal to benefit themselves. It is just incomprehensible to me that we allow this to continue. The time has come for the statute to be fixed. So I would appreciate your thoughtful attention to this legislation. Please pass it, and let's move forward holding people accountable for their actions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Allen. Our condolences to
thank you
and your family. Senator Sendrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to any of the witnesses, is the word collision or collisions described or defined somewhere else in statute? And maybe it's the Senate Counsel. I don't see the word defined in at least the bill.
Senator Dahl has a response, and we can also ask counsel to respond.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sendrum, you know, we have all the definitions in the 169 statutes related to driving safety, and there is no definition of collision, crash, or accident at this time.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sendrum.
So a collision could be a deer or a raccoon or a squirrel, or, I mean, just kind of getting into where Senator Westrum was and nuances.
So looks like our other testifier might have a response.
Okay.
In your testimony, or did you want to respond directly to this question?
Mr. Chair, if I kind of interrupted flow here, we don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe we'll come back to the question during the discussion.
Well,
thanks.
Mr. Chairman, let me follow up.
Senator Tomasoni.
Well, I have the same question, because it seems to me that accident is more encompassing than collision is. And we may be taking a word out of statute that we want to have in statute as opposed to putting in this new one. Because you could potentially have an accident and not hit somebody, which would then that be not a collision, and therefore you don't have to stop. So we may want to think about the wording in this. Because even as I look further on in the bill, a peace officer who, in the regular course of duty, investigates a collision, takes the word accident out again. And so, I don't know, maybe we need accident and collision, or accident and or collision. I don't know. But.
Okay. We'll hang on to those thoughts and discuss them in the discussion phase. Ms. Mueller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Mueller, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Alliance on Crime. I'm also an appellate prosecutor, and I handled one of the many appeals that involved Kane Thompson. Mr. Al-Nazir was, as she said, convicted, and the Supreme Court reversed his conviction and explicitly said in reversing that conviction that there may be a shortcoming in the statute because the legislature may want drivers to stop and determine what it is they've struck before moving on. And so that bill would close that loophole. We do have the support today of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, the Bicycle Alliance, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and Minnesotans for Safe Driving all have supported this legislation. And we've spent a lot of time, if I can address that question, we've spent a lot of time talking about the language and how this would work. And the idea is that people will be required to stop after a collision to determine what was struck. But you're only going to be criminally liable if it turns out you've hit a person or a car. So if you're looking down at your radio and you hit something and you think it's a deer and you keep driving and it ends up being a deer, there's no liability there. But if it ends up that you hit a person or another car, then you would be held criminally responsible for that.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up? Is that in the bill?
Ms. Mueller.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator. So the collision, the requirements that you see, for example, under Subdivision 1, if you're in a collision, you should stop and investigate, and then it's if you know or have reason to know it resulted in injury or death, then you have to stay at the scene and give notice and follow the other requirements. And that would be true for Subdivision 1, Subdivision 2 for the attended vehicle. And then for unattended vehicles, Subdivision 4, the requirements are a little bit different. But so it's the elements of those, each of those subdivisions that would apply.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and again, getting back to the word accident versus crash, actually the Department of Public Safety is supportive of the change away from accident. As I've taught driver education over the years, accident, there's a lot of accidents infer that it could have been prevented, and that's true, and it's usually, I always say there's no such thing as an accident because you didn't mean to, but if you are speeding or you are purposely texting, if you are purposely distracted, then that shows some intent. It wasn't an accident. We are actually talking with the DPS about perhaps even the word crash or collision, and we actually are working on language that might satisfy the DPS. They use the word crash or collision a lot more than accident.
Thank you. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does this proposal define vehicle in terms of is it just a car or a four-wheeler or a snowmobile or any other vehicle? What is the intent, just to cover cars and trucks? And
Ms. Mueller.
Yep, Mr. Chair and Senator Franzen. It's my understanding it used to just say any vehicle, and then motor vehicle was added to the statute, and that we didn't change that. I don't know if motor vehicle is defined elsewhere in the statutes.
Ms. Berzoff.
Mr. Chair, motor vehicle and vehicle are both defined in Chapter 169, and I think the duties in this section apply to a motor vehicle driver, but if the motor vehicle driver collides with a vehicle that is not necessarily a motorized vehicle, that would still trigger the duty to stop and investigate.
Senator Franz.
To follow up again, so if I'm backing up from my car and I bump into the car bumper behind me just to get out of a parking spot, is that what's intended to also be covered here, or is that that happens pretty often, I would imagine, when you're trying to get out of a tight vehicle, especially with this weather.
Ms. Mueller.
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator, if you look at that, would be the unattended vehicle, so that would be subdivision 4. And we didn't change anything, what the current requirements are. If you strike an unattended vehicle, and if you know or have reason to know it results in any damage, then you have a responsibility to either locate, notify the driver, or to report to a police officer, or leave a note on the car. And so that was what was in the statute before, and we didn't change any of those requirements.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
If Senator Franzen has finished.
I'm done, yes.
In the first subdivision, Senator Dahl, why wouldn't it just be if you collided with a vehicle that had a person in it? Why would you have to decide you have to stop, as opposed to trying to figure out whether they were hurt or not? What difference does that make? If you hit a car with a person in it, you should stop. Not whether you think the person is dead or that the collision could have resulted in an injury. If somebody's in the car and you hit them, you stop.
Well, Senator Rest, I think that's what the bill does. It says you have to stop and get out and then figure out what happened. And then if you figure out what happened, you hurt someone, then it triggers the requirement to stay on the scene. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if you read the bill, it basically says if you hit something, you have to stop and investigate. Then this next sentence says, if you have a reason to know someone was hurt or killed, then you have to stay put.
Okay. I just find it confusing. Sorry.
Yeah, well, with all the strikeouts. Questions, members? Anything? Would anyone else like to testify on this bill? All right. Does anyone? Mr. Jordahl, come forward, please. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Jared Jordahl with the Department of Public Safety. I just wanted to convey we do support this bill. Our only possible consideration, as the senator mentioned, is we do prefer the term crash to collision. Accident is smattered in the statutes, and we're trying to go away from that for the reasons that have been stated, that there's a strong behavioral element in most traffic incidents. We're trying to go to crash. Crash is not currently defined. Accident is not defined, and collision is also not defined. So I have a little bit of a misnomer here, I guess we'd say. But the department does publish. We have a crash record system. We have a crash facts report that we publish.
Thank you, Mr. Jordahl. I I think we often use words, and not every single word in the statute receives a definition. We just go to Webster's, or we just go by common usage. We know what a collision is. We know what a crash is. You hit something. But if you're, as we go on our way to judiciary, you feel compelled to create a definition of hitting something. Knock yourselves out. Senator Rest.
I have another hypothetical.
All right.
So you're going down the road, a two-lane highway, and you're on the phone, you're fooling with the radio, you're texting, whatever, and you go over into the other lane, and all of a sudden you can make a correction. You get back in your lane, and you go on your merry way, and the car you just missed goes in the ditch, and somebody's killed. Do you have any duty to stop under this bill or not?
Ms. Moeller or Senator Dahl?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator, I thought I had anticipated every single hypothetical question, but that was not one I had anticipated, but it's a good question. No,
That does happen, and
right,
people just go on, and
right,
there's somebody who's in a ditch.
Under this bill, there would have to actually be a collision. I think under Department of Public Safety, you might classify something as a hit and run, that even if it wouldn't fall under the definitions of these bills, so it would probably be reported as a hit and run. Am I?
Mr. Jordan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest. My understanding is the Department of Public Safety would view that as a culpable act on the part of the swerving car, despite there not being an impact. And that would be classified as a crash.
That would, okay. So this bill would apply. The person should have stopped, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jordan.
I believe Ms. Moeller was saying that potentially under the precise wording of this bill, with the emphasis on collision implying an impact, that your fact scenario might not be encompassed in this bill. We would, as the department, consider that to be a culpable incident and a crash.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Thomason.
To that point, we're talking about a court case that said the person didn't hit somebody when it appears that they clearly didn't. In that particular instance, nobody got hit. And so collision is the act of colliding or coming violently into contact, crash, the collision of two airplanes. Accident would actually cover this particular scenario, whereas I don't think collision does.
Senator Tomasoni is trying to lengthen the reach of the law. The record show.
It's, all right. And it's not, first time. It's not like me.
I know.
Mueller.
Yes, thank you. Senator, I think, and I'm going to put on a defense attorney hat here, which is something I don't normally do. But I think the issue with both of those scenarios is that if a person was doing something, even if they were negligent or not, and they drove on and maybe they caused something behind them and didn't realize it, they don't have that knowledge requirement. And statutes need to have that knowledge. For someone to be culpable under the law, there needs to be some sort of knowledge. And that's where I think it isn't criminal behavior. It might be a negligent type of behavior. You might even be able to show gross negligence at some point criminally. But for this, there has to actually be that collision where the person knows that there's been some sort of impact.
Thank you. Anything further? All right. Would anyone else like to testify on this bill? Great. Do I have a motion? This needs to be referred to judiciary or whomever makes the motion. Senator Jensen moves that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator.
It can happen after the motion.
Okay, great. Senator Jensen moves that Senate File Number 1246 be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee. Were there any amendments? Nope. Okay. Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at Subdivision 5 on page 2. Line 228 and following, and I'm thinking about conversations I've had, particularly with township officers, who will talk about people driving over their residences' mailboxes with some degree of frequency, at least where I live, in suburban subdivisions.
What's going on?
Would that kind of a collision apply to this law? And maybe it should. I'm not saying it shouldn't.
I think it would, but we'll let the experts answer. Ms. Mueller?
Yep, I believe, and this bill doesn't change what's currently in the statute for that. It's only fixtures legally upon the highway. I believe a mailbox would qualify. I can't remember if that's defined in statute, fixtures legally upon the highway. But I believe that a mailbox would qualify for that. And that's where we put if the driver knows or has reason to know, because a driver may not have reason to know if something's a fixture legally on the highway. So we wanted to make sure we weren't criminalizing innocent behavior. But to answer your question, yes, I believe a mailbox would qualify here. And that would be a misdemeanor if they don't follow the requirements under the statute.
Okay. It will take some education.
Sleepy driving, by the way, it's a bad idea. I did stop and leave a note at their door. Senator Dahl.
And Mr. Chair, unfortunately, I know someone near Lonsdale was killed at their mailbox, and the person drove off. So.
A collision, I think, two pieces of metal.
All right. Senator Jensen's motion. Anything further, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Dahl. All right, Senator Wieger. Yep, all right, great, thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
I was reading the bill.
Uh-huh.
The mailbox issue, it's under $1,000. I don't know too many mailboxes who qualify for. Yeah. I think you should anyway.
I think the mailboxes in Rochester cost more than $1,000, apparently.
Yes.
You didn't hear me. It's all those doctors' mailboxes down there. Thank you. Greetings. Welcome to the, well, I guess you're a member of the committee, so welcome to the table, Senator Wieger. Senate File 1892.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate File 1892 would designate part of Highway 36, which runs through North St. Paul, as the Officer Richard Crittenden Memorial Highway. North St. Paul, it's 7-8 miles northeast of here. It's my hometown, it's my parents' hometown, and it was established in 1887. 5 years ago, Labor Day, September 7, when most of us were off that day, a beautiful day, but many people show up for work that day, and including police officers, firefighters, other first responders, and on that morning at 7 a.m. or so, Officer Richard Crittenden arrived, and you'll learn a little more detail later, but only about an hour and a half later, there's a call, a domestic call, disturbance issue, place where there had been prior calls, prior arrests, but you know that you're going to respond to that call to protect the public, in this case, you know, a victim. Officer Crittenden responded, back up, coming, was there. But in a very heroic effort to help, you know, save the life of the person making that call, Officer Crittenden, that was his last call. At age 57, been with the department 9 years. Earlier on, the Hennepin County Sheriff left a grieving widow, Christine, who you'll hear from, a son, Rick Jr., who will be here, other kids, grandkids, and a community in mourning. This has never happened before in North St. Paul. Hopefully it never will. But this bill, Senate File 1892, pays tribute to the memory, to the heroic actions of Officer Richard Crittenden. Members, I have three testifiers, and we'll hear first from the city manager, Jason Ziemer, followed by Chief Loth, and then from Christine Officer Crittenden's widow. So if we may proceed with Jason Ziemer, the city manager.
Great. Thank you, Senator Uyghur. Mr. Ziemer, welcome to the committee.
You.
Please introduce yourself.
Yep, my name is Jason Ziemer. I'm the current city manager for the city of North St. Paul. Mr. Chair, committee members, Senator Uyghur, thanks for the opportunity to be here today to discuss this important matter to the community. In preparation for today, I was asked about why this such a designation is important to the community. I didn't have an opportunity to know Officer Crittenden. I came several years after the event that happened. But in my visit with staff and community members, just to get a sense for what the officer was like, he came with a tremendous amount of high regard, high respect for the community, for the staff. And, there's certainly those events in a community that are emblazoned on the memory of a community, and this was one of those type of events. The death of Officer Crittenden back in 2009 was a tragedy for the community and the organization, and it's really been one of those type of events that the community has really struggled to recover from, in addition to the family as well. How do you get over an event like this that happens to somebody that's so close to you? And it's still an unfortunate event that is talked about within the community. As Senator Uyghur stated, North St. Paul is a small community just not too far from here. It's about population, about 12,000, but it really is a small, close-knit community. The police department, and especially Officer Crittenden during his time on the force, was the epitome of what it means to be a community police department. He was highly regarded by the business community. He was adored by kids. He had a tremendous amount of respect for people within the community. He was adored by staff, and it was very popular throughout the community. Such a designation on the highway is certainly a great opportunity for the residents and the state to honor a hero and a friend, but also gives people an opportunity to kind of recognize a person that gave so much for his community by serving the community proudly that he had done for several years. So even though to some it might seem like a small gesture to the community and to the family, it really is an opportunity to help with that continued healing as we move forward with kind of with his memory and trying to move forward as a community together. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ziemer. Chief Law, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Tom Loth. I am the Chief of Police of the North St. Paul Police Department. I've been with the department for 25 years, nine of which as Chief of Police. Let me say thank you to the honorable members of the Senate Transportation and Public Safety Committee for taking your time and consideration today. I'd like to provide a brief history of the fateful day that we lost Officer Rick Crittenden. As Senator Uyghur earlier mentioned, it was happened on Labor Day, Monday, September 7th, 2009. And the call was at about 8:37 in the morning. As Senator Uyghur stated, it was a beautiful day out. In fact, I myself had been planning to go with some events with family when we got the fateful call. Basically, Officer Crittenden had responded to a domestic situation, order for protection violation at an apartment complex on Skillman Avenue and McKnight Road. Officer Julie Larson from Maplewood was his backup officer and responded with him. We knew the offender. He had an active felony warrant and was considered dangerous. Officer Crittenden and Officer Olson responded to the apartment complex parking lot, spoke with the complainant and her daughter. She was afraid that her ex-husband, who was a suspect, was going to do them harm and maybe laying in wait for them inside. Officer Crittenden and Officer Olson went into the apartment building with her and performed a protective sweep of the common area, checked a vacant apartment that was in the place, and then proceeded to the victim's apartment. The complainant. The complainant opened the apartment door and started to go inside, at which time a figure with a flaming rag came forward. Officer Crittenden stepped forward and pushed the mother and daughter out of the way of the attack and was hit with the burning rag. And then as he started to regain control, Officer Olson was attacked by the suspect. Officer Crittenden threw his injury through the rag and everything else, fought through that and was able to engage the offender, freeing Officer Olson. Unfortunately, during that conflict, Officer Crittenden was shot and wounded in the head and died instantaneously. Through his actions, though, Officer Olson was able to respond to the actions and exchange gunfire with the suspect, sustaining an injury herself, non-life-threatening, and was able to back out of the apartment. She had so wounded the suspect that he eventually died, succumbed to his injuries there in the apartment building. This was a big loss for our department. We're a small department of 19 people, and we were a very young department at the time. I truly believe that Officer Crittenden's actions there, being able to engage the suspect for the other officer, saved the other officer's life, possibly responding officer's lives, and the mother and the daughter, and possibly more within the community. The person was intent on causing harm that day, and Officer Crittenden's actions were truly heroic and truly saved life. Unfortunately, he lost it during it. I think with the incident happened so fast, and there's one thing I said back then, and I realized the importance in life, that life does change in an instant. We went from a vibrant, very good officer, human being, husband, to where we were suddenly without him. Officer Rick Crittenden celebrated his 57th birthday the week before, exactly 1 week before that time. In 2 days, since hence then, he would have celebrated his 9-year anniversary with our department. So Rick came to law enforcement later in life than most. He had lived a life, manufacturing, other things, and found time. Raising a family was very important to him, and when he got the time to being a police officer, he chased that dream. He finally was able to do what he always wanted to do. Okay, and when he had that opportunity to pursue it, he did so wholeheartedly and with all his efforts. Rick didn't know any other way. That was Rick. And for him, being a police officer was truly a calling. Officer Crittenden, he was a vital and an integral part of our department. He volunteered. He was a coordinator of our reserve officers with his wife. He is also a field training officer. He was our business liaison officer within the community. If you know anything about North St. Paul, it's a cute little community with a downtown area a couple blocks long, 7th Avenue. There is not a person along 7th Avenue that didn't know Rick, his voice, his presence. He was very well known, very well loved, and deeply missed. Rick was a fatherly figure. As I said, we had a young department. He was a fatherly figure to those officers within our department. Rick offered experience from not just as an officer, but from other life things for people to lean on. And on top of that, he was also very much a fatherly figure to our teenagers up at our high school and stuff who we engaged quite well with. He had the knowledge and the wherewithal to step back and to talk to them and try to lead them. So he's very unique with officers and something truly missing as you try to train young officers into getting there as older officers. As I said, either Rick came to law enforcement later than most in life. As I said there, when he did, it was 1993 for the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, the Water Patrol, part-time. He worked many part-time jobs as a deputy police officer for other places, looking for that full-time job. 1997, he did get that full-time job with Wabasha County Sheriff's Department. And then, of course, in September of 2000, he came to our department. One thing I'd like to say, Rick was a big man, and not just in physical stature alone. He had a presence about him, a warmth about him. This large presence, he had a commanding voice and an irrepressible laugh, which you don't always find together. You can see from his photo up here, Rick Crittenden, his smile, twinkle in his eye, his compassion, his sense of fairness and humor, and that feeling of safety he provided us and our community has forever been taken from our department, our community, and his family. So let us please proudly remember and recognize his life and sacrifice by designating Trunk Highway 36 in North St. Paul as Officer Richard Crittenden Memorial Highway. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chief. Welcome, Mrs. Crittenden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Christine Crittenden. I live in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. I'm the wife of Richard Crittenden Sr., also more commonly known as Rick or Critter. As it's been said, he did start in law enforcement later in life, and he was truly honored to be serving the community of North St. Paul. He loved the town. He loved the people he worked with. He took great pride in being a peace officer. He took time to listen to people. He took time to visit with the kids, the seniors, and the business people. He took time with all the reserves that came through, and they didn't always like the fact that they didn't have all the power of a full-time officer, but he told them in due time, you too will be able to have these abilities to correct behaviors in a gentle way. It's better to teach somebody than to bully them into it. Rick had great integrity. He was a wonderful husband, wonderful father, grandfather. He left behind a son and his wife and two twins, grandsons. He left behind a daughter, her husband, and four children. And his last grandchild was born 6 months before he was killed. The community has been so wonderful. They are truly a loving community. I've heard so many stories of my husband and his interactions with them that we decided as a family we wanted to give back to them. So along with the picture of my husband is the picture that Neil Brodeen, who is a statue maker, chose to make a statue out of Rick. And it was chosen to be with a child because he was the grandpa to so many kids in that community. And that is the statue that is now in North St. Paul that we donated to it. And I truly believe the community deserves to have people that drive by that highway and that town to know that they're there and that they care and how much they care for their law enforcement and their fire department and each other. I thank you for your time, and I appreciate you listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you, and I could, on behalf of the committee, extend our condolences to you and to thank you for your sacrifice and the sacrifice of your husband, the ultimate sacrifice, and the entire community and the department. Thank you. This is the least we can do, of course, but I'm glad we at least have this opportunity. I want to mention that Representative Leon Lilly is here in support. Thank you for being with us today, Representative Lilly. Members, questions?
And excuse me, Mr. Chair, I didn't have on testifier list, but Mike Wardman from the St. Paul Police Department,
welcome.
If he
welcome
could enter
committee.
A statement.
Yes.
And I had noted Officer Crittenden's son, Rick Jr., is in the audience.
Welcome.
Just to say hello. And
thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us this morning or this afternoon. Unlike Rick Sr., Rick Jr. is not very much for public speaking. So I asked if I could speak in his stead.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yeah, my name is Mike Wartman, and I'm a sergeant with the St. Paul Police Department. And I'm here to talk to you today about Rick Crittenden Sr. I was not aware of this hearing until this morning, so I apologize for being a little bit unprepared. But I first met Rick Crittenden when we were in college and in school to become police officers. Like Rick, I joined quite later on in life. So we were both known as grandpas. Going through that school at our age, we quickly became friends, and we've been best friends ever since. Rick left after we graduated. He went to Wabasha County, while I stayed up here in the cities to work with St. Paul. The distance only solidified our friendship. We became closer and closer. We were inseparable. When Rick met Christine, he moved up here to the cities to be closer to her and left Wabasha County, came up to North St. Paul, which he just relished. He loved it. Rick served the citizens of North St. Paul with pride and professionalism. And on September 7th, 2009, Rick gave the ultimate sacrifice protecting the citizens of North St. Paul. To this day, I have a picture of Rick on my desk, and I look at it every morning when I walk in, reminding myself what a cop should really be. Rick was a real cop. It's my understanding that this hearing is about a bill before the committee to rename Minnesota Highway 36 through North St. Paul the Rick Crittenden Senior Memorial Highway. What kind of a man must one be to have a state highway named in honor of his memory? If there was ever such a person, that person would be Rick Crittenden Sr. In closing, I just want to remind you of a verse that is sometimes associated with police officers, firefighters, military men, or service members, first responders, which says, "There is no greater love nowhere, you won't find it, than a man who laid down his life for a friend." On September 7th, 2009, Rick Crittenden laid down his life for two complete strangers. That's the kind of man Rick Crittenden Sr. was. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee members, anything? Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Crittenden wanted to add a couple of other comments if she could.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I purchased my husband's squad from the city of North St. Paul after he was killed. They very generously pretty much gave it to me for a dime. And the squad has been turned into a memorial vehicle. It is outside parked, and it has the name of every peace officer in the state of Minnesota that's been killed in the line of duty since 1874 on the trunk of that squad. That is my way of honoring my husband in building the memory of every officer on that trunk, and their families should always be remembered that they know they're facing a very dangerous job when they take it. In your head, you know it. In your heart, you don't believe it'll happen. But that squad is for all the officers, deputies, agents that have given their life. And that squad attends every funeral. It has attended many events and benefits for officers. And I would like the awareness to be so that other families don't ever have to deal with this. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a wonderful tribute. What time are you, until what time is the squad going to be out in front?
As long as you would like it.
All right. Well, this committee will hopefully wrap up relatively soon. Okay. Senator Westrom. Well,
Mr. Chair, I have nothing new to add other than as a committee member and on behalf, as the chair said, our sympathies and condolences. Really appreciate hearing the story and his memory, and it does give us all a renewed perspective on life and what our public safety officers do for us. So glad you brought this proposal forward.
I want to recognize Representative Schoen, who's here in support. Thank you for being here. Himself a cop. So thank you for your service. Senator Wieger.
Yes. May I move the bill?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1892 be recommended to pass and refer to the Senate floor.
All right. Senator Wieger moves Senate File 1892 be recommended to pass and pass to the Senate floor. Anything further, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Wieger.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Senator Rest, 1287.
Thanks, Dory.
Welcome, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a little bit difficult to follow such an emotional bill, but here we are. So a little bit of background about Senate File 1287, and then I have some author's amendments, and if the committee acts favorably on it, there's been requests for referral to the Judiciary Committee. So, some time back, I was contacted by one of my constituents who whose husband had died, and the automobile that they owned, which was in his name, had to go into his estate rather than just being, like we might think, automatically picked up by her as a new owner, and there was quite a bit of red tape to get the cart transferred. And she had been informed, and indeed it is the case, that in some other states there is a provision in state in their state laws for a transfer on death of the title to someone else that you can designate on the title, and that's what this bill allows. And other states that have transfer on death vehicle registration are Arizona, Arkansas, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, Ohio, and Vermont. So it is not, we're not an outlier in moving forward with this. And but it does cause some wrinkles in our laws that we need to be we need to take care of in an in amendments to the bill. One of them, if you look at the, I don't know whether the fiscal note that was done for the House is in. Is in members' packets, but apparently, even if we pass this now, which I hope we will do, so we get it on the books, the department would not be able to implement it until 2017, and I guess that's part of their upgrade on their. In their technology, but that seems, I mean, 3 years? But, okay, to get it going, that's what, I wouldn't want to wait, even if the implementation of it is put out that long. The other issue, another issue, is the taxation of transfer of titles. And although Ms. Berezovsky and Ms. Pollack from the Senate Council on the Tax Committee believes that there is not a taxable event with regard to that kind of transfer, that the current law deals with it, to be absolutely sure, we would have an amendment that said such a transfer is not a taxable event and subject to MVEST. So the so there are a couple of amendments. At least right. Our Ms. Berezovsky has the amendment. So is that the A1?
A1.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A1 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Ress. The Senator Ress moves the A1 amendment. It's coming around. Pause for a second. Let folks look at it. It is an author's amendment, however.
It takes care of the taxable event issue.
All right. Great. Thank you. Questions, members, on the A1? All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything more than that.
All right, great. Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest, you mentioned a 2017. That was one of the things I thought of on this sort of a situation. There's no effective date?
Senator Rest.
Ms. Berezovsky, do I need an effective date to coincide with the ability of the department to implement it?
Mr. Chair, I know Ms. McCormick is here, and This, I think that information came from last year's fiscal note in the House side, so she might want to refresh that opinion in case it's changed at all. And but I think
the fiscal note I have is from March 13th of 2013 when the bill had a hearing in the House, and it one of the assumptions was that the DVS would not be able to implement prior to July 1 of 2017. And that although there would be the assumption that there would be a vehicle tax and fee implication, which I think we've taken care of, I hope, they were, DVS was unable to determine the impact. I'm just reading from the from their fiscal note.
Thank you. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And we haven't gotten a fiscal note request this year, and I don't know if the wording in the bill is a little bit different or not from last year. I haven't had time to look at last year's bill because I remember the fact there were concerns, but in our staff looking at it this year, we did not think we would have to have a delayed effective date. We think we can get the information on the title form. Well, it's the title form is really
the
compact
issue. Yeah.
It's very hard to get that on the because we have so much information. But we, in looking at it, our vehicle services staff think they would be able to get that information on there. And we haven't, as I said, we haven't been asked to do a fiscal note. There probably is a fiscal impact. We don't know what that would be because it really would be the Department of Revenue with the motor vehicle sales tax. That would be the area. So in terms of MNLARS, I don't. I was not told that that would be an issue. So when we looked at the bill this time. So.
That's good news, Senator Rust.
Then Mr. Chairman, Ms. Berezovsky, responding to Senator Kiffmeyer, if there's no effective date in here, the it would be August 1st?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, that's correct.
And Ms. McCormick, Mr. Chairman, are you indicating that if there was an effective date of August 1st and it did not trigger a taxable event, that the department would be able to accommodate the ability to have a transfer of title and death?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rust, yes, that would be the
all right.
case.
All right. Great. Good news. All right. Good news breaking out all over. All right. Questions, members?
That's unusual.
All right. I'm sorry. Senator Westrum.
Chair, Senator Rest, I was one of the few that got excited when we had transfer on death deeds passed through about 4 or 5 years ago in this legislature. I think you've got a good bill. I'd like to join on with you if you have room for more authors, but this just makes sense to me. It kind of puts the issue in front of folks or people when they have a vehicle and sure can avoid some expense and headache for family after somebody's passed away. And so,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, I'll have my staff take care of it this afternoon.
Very good. So I support your bill, and I'm glad to see this. Sooner we can get it done, I think, the better.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Rust, if we can help people avoid a trip through probate. Anyone who's had to run some estate work through probate, it's a pain in the neck. Senator Osmick, did you have a question? Okay, thank you. All right, so Senator Rust, do you have a motion?
So I move that Senate file 1287 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment, on the motion? You said as amended, right?
As amended.
Yes, mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. All right. All in favor of the rest motion, say aye.
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 Oh, no. Motion carries. Thank you,
thank
Senator
you very
Rust.
Much.
All right. And bringing us on home, we have Senator Rood. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
file 1742.
Mr. Chair and members, I bring forward to you Senate file 1742. It's pretty straightforward. I do have an amendment, author's amendment, to put it in the shape that we would like it to be passed. The amendment simply changes the date. It's effective final enactment. The original sunset date is May 2nd, and I would hope that we would not be dealing with snow plowing after May 2nd, but being this year, we don't know, so we want to we don't want to hedge your bets this time.
Exactly. Well, and hopefully Senator Rood will have this through the process before then, too. But it's a good amendment. So who would like to move the A1 amendment? Senator Peterson? Oh, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Great. Thank you. Senator Rood.
Thank you. Members, this bill simply removes the sunset on this provision. It was originally enacted in 2009, and it had a sunset of 2013, and then we set it forward one more year. And we've not seen any ill effects of this bill, and so now we would like to take the sunset off and have it go forward from here. And what this bill does is, you know, in 2009, in that era, we really had a building boom, and we had a lot of different subdivisions and stuff, and they boomed, they were supposed to build, and then they didn't happen. And so maybe one house or two homes are in that subdivision, and now the roads have not been adopted by the cities. And so these folks are in the position where they need city services, such as snow plowing, so that they can get ambulance and such down the road. And what this bill does is allow them to do that. The cities then are allowed to snowplow for them. They can contract with the city or not, as they so choose. In the city, you have a letter in your packet from the city of Jenkins. And what Jenkins has done is they plow for several subdivisions, and they charge the homeowners $150 a year, and they contract then through the city. They pay that fee, and then they have all their snowplowing services paid for. And so this bill allows for that to happen. It's worked very well in our small cities, and so I would appreciate your support, and I stand for any questions today.
Great. Thank you. League of Minnesota Cities is here. Did you want to speak? Or?
Mr. Chair, members, Ann Finn representing the League of Minnesota Cities, just here to answer questions.
Great. Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Rosmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Rood. Just so I understand this maybe a little bit more completely, what this is doing is allowing local units of government to be able to perform regular activities on an uncompleted street that has not been turned back to them. So because I know working previously for 11 years on a local, that we don't want to touch anything that's not up to standard, because we're going to be held liable and responsible if we do touch it. So what I'm seeing here is you're just removing the sunset so that they can continue to go on to unturned back streets to make sure that they can receive those plowing services and other services, correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, this bill deals strictly with the snow plowing. And so it doesn't create a history of road maintenance for the cities on roads, as you say, that are not up to standard.
Right. Thank you. All right. Any other questions, members? We have a motion. Senator Peterson would like to move that Senate file 1742 as amended be recommended to pass. And Senator Rood, just to the floor.
I just think just to the floor.
Sent to the Senate floor. Bill. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator, and members, thank you.
All right. So, members, we're meeting tomorrow evening in a joint meeting to hear about airport issues.
Thanks for your words.
7 o'clock right here. It'll be fun. There'll be a lot of people here. It'll be quite the whoop-de-doo. And then we're back here again on Wednesday for a regular committee meeting. And I also wanted just to mention, because I'm a bad person and didn't mention it earlier. Our intern, Sarah Larson, has been helping hand out the amendments, and we have Ben Fribley, who's our page, who's also here. So wave. Thank you for all your help today. All right. With that, members, we are adjourned.
I will thank you for all reception.